The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I'm on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. This podcast shares the military transition hot washes and after-action reports of your fellow veterans to smooth your own path out of the military. Hello, everyone. On today's episode, we are talking about mental health. Though this is a critically important topic, I wanted to give you a warning that we do talk about suicide and suicidal ideation. If you are struggling with your mental health, please do not go it alone. At a minimum, please call the Veteran Crisis Line by dialing 988. Today's guest is Major General Greg Martin. Greg served in the U.S. Army for 36 years. Some of the highlights of his career included commanding the Corps of Engineers Northwest Division, being the Commandant of the Army Engineer School, the Commandant of the Army War College, President of the National Defense University, and Special Assistant to the Chief of Engineers. He is also the author of Bipolar General, My Forever War with Mental Illness, and he shares a lot of education and resources on his website at www.bipolargeneral.com. He is here today to talk to us about his transition and his journey regarding mental health. Greg, welcome to the show.
Laurie, thank you very much. It's really an honor and a privilege to be with you.
Well, we're not necessarily going to take the traditional approach to talking about transition on today's episode because your transition was very different. We are going to talk about how that went, but you have become really a very fierce advocate for taking care of your mental health. And that's what we're really going to focus on today. So I know in your book, you go into a lot of detail about your process and how your career with the Army wrapped up. So take me back to that day in July of 2014 when you were called into your boss's office and told you could either resign or be fired.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I had unknowingly been living with bipolar disorder for years, but it was unknown, unrecognized, undetected. And the manic highs started getting higher and higher so that by the spring of 2014, I was in full-blown mania, pretty much out of control, over the top, in a state of insanity or madness. And so my boss, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Marty Dempsey, who I had worked for four different times and we had a great relationship, he started getting reports, anonymous reports of my behavior, how bizarre and, you know, crazy and weird it had become. So people wrote these letters to him saying, hey, we don't know what's wrong with General Martin, but something's really wrong. Here are the behaviors that we're witnessing and seeing at National Defense University. And so General Dempsey was really startled. And so he did a series of assessments and decided that I had to go. Now, I didn't know he had decided. And on a Friday afternoon, I got a call saying, report to the chairman's office at 10 a.m. Monday morning. So I knocked on the door. I reported in. And first thing, I was thinking, hey, maybe he's going to promote me. And the first person I saw when I went in the office was the lawyer. And that I knew right there, okay, no promotion. This is not going to be a good meeting. And so General Dempsey, he strode across the office and he said, Greg, I love you like a brother. You've done A plus work. Nobody could have done what you did in 2 years, but your time at National Defense is over. You have until 5 p.m. today to resign, or I will fire you. And I'm also ordering you to get a psychiatric evaluation this week at Walter Reed. So you would have thought I would be disappointed or crushed. I wasn't. I said, thank you, sir. This is great news because God put me in this job to do great things. Now he's taking me out and he's going to put me somewhere else and I'm going to do even bigger things. And the paradox is that 10 years later, I was actually correct because now with my role in mental health advocacy, I'm doing the most important work of my life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was obviously the best thing that could have happened to you. And I sometimes feel like the worst things that happen to us can end up being the best things. But in that regard, that was probably the best thing for your future and your mental health, right?
Yes, General Dempsey made, I think, a really wise, courageous, caring decision because he knew, based on these reports, that there was something really wrong with me, with my brain, with my mind, and so by pulling me out, he probably saved my marriage, my family, and you could even say my life because I've had a number of doctors that have told me, given how manic I was and my level of psychosis, which are hallucinations and delusions, that I'm really fortunate that I didn't die of a heart attack or have a stroke during that period. So Dempsey did the right thing. He was a bold, caring leader who got me out of a bad place.
You, when you talked earlier, you shared with me that when you were medically retired from the Army, you retired with no continuity of care plan. And thankfully that this is no longer happening. They're not allowing that to happen for people who are being medically retired with a mental health issues. But how has that policy regarding mental health changed across the DoD?
Well, the first one that you just mentioned is continuity of care. So I walked out the door, left the Army in May 2015, and I had no support system, no medical care plan, nothing. And so I basically was forced to just rely on TRICARE because I hadn't gotten into the VA system yet because I was so sick. My brain was so ill that I couldn't figure stuff out. I couldn't think through the process. So I worked through TRICARE. And that's not a particularly easy system to navigate through. I mean, there's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape. And so it was about only a, it was, it really took almost a year for me to get into the VA system, which was really much, much better than going in the civilian world.
Yeah.
But so the DoD has put a policy that anybody who has any kind of mental health issues for which they're being treated, when they depart the service of any of the services, that the medical community must create a continuity of care plan with either a civilian provider, the VA, or somebody. And I think that's a really big, positive step forward. The other thing I would say is that if you go back in time, and you compare how the military viewed mental health, mental illness, caring for people, if you go back 20, 30, 40 years, and then you come to today, the difference is striking how much better the military is. I mean, there's way more providers in terms of psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, and so forth. So way more resources, more money. The resources have been pushed down to a much lower level. Like when I was a lieutenant, the only mental health care was up at these big regional hospitals. So you really couldn't get there. Now, today, in the Army, they're down at battalion level, which is about a 500 soldier formation, pretty low down, where the rubber meets the road. So
Yeah.
that's a big plus. Plus, the military, all the services are trying to normalize the conversation about mental health. Lots of training, education, workshops, forums, and a lot of transparency, you know, because a lot of soldiers and service members think that if I get treated for mental health, it's the end of my career. I won't get promoted. I'll lose my security clearance. Well, that's generally not true. For the most part, that is not true. Now, there maybe was a time when that was true, but it's not anymore. In fact, the military is really looking for ways to accommodate and keep service members in the force and by working with them. And so if you have some kind of mental illness or mental challenge or whatever, and you are being treated and the treatment is working, in most cases, the military will keep you in the service. They won't hurt your career at all. And I think that's something that the military is trying to really emphasize and educate the force on.
Okay. And I'm hoping that they're bringing you in to help them with that as an advocate for that. So I do kind of see you out there talking a lot about your book and giving a lot of talks. You know, you and I just talked about the fact that you were went live with our sponsor, AFMA, you know, a few days ago. And so I think that's great that you're out there and talking about it. You know, I've heard you talk about your experience, and you mentioned that like 2014 to 2016, you describe it as living in bipolar hell. You were committed to a VA inpatient psych ward. Like, talk to me about that time frame and how you made it through that.
Well, it truly was hell. It was horrible, the worst, hardest experience of my life. And so going back to when I was fired by the chairman, over the next 4 months, between July of 2014 and November, I spiraled, then crashed into terrible, hopeless, crippling depression and terrifying psychosis. And so I went down, down, down. And I went to the doctor after getting multiple misdiagnoses that said I was okay, there was nothing wrong with me. This time I went in a severe state of depression and psychosis, and they figured it out and they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder type 1, which is a very serious mental illness. But I went from bad to worse. I just kept spiraling down. So even though I was getting medical care in the military and then in the civilian world, prior to the VA, nothing was working at all for me. The medications didn't work. The therapy didn't work. And so I just kept getting worse. I had what they call passive suicidal ideations, where all I wanted to do was to die. Thankfully, I didn't have active ideations that I wanted to kill myself. I wanted somebody or something else to kill me. Essentially, these ideations were that one of them is I was being spied on, being watched, that I was going to get arrested, convicted, sent to jail. And so that one continuously. I had no energy, no interest. I essentially would, for most of the day, I would lie on my back, staring into space, ruminating about every mistake I ever made. And when I did get some energy, I would dive on the floor and bang my head on the hardwood floor, punching myself, and then yelling angrily at God for ruining my life. Anyway, that went on for 2 whole years. Finally, a good friend plus my wife got me into a very good VA hospital in Vermont. And there I was put in inpatient. And I was so grateful. I said, thank you, doctor. This is what I think I need so that I can start to begin to recover and heal and make progress forward. And the 2 weeks in the inpatient ward were fantastic. It was a multidisciplinary team, very professional, compassionate, understanding, friendly. I got a lot out of it. And then I spent 4 more weeks living in a dorm room inside the hospital. So I actually spent 6 weeks in that VA hospital, and I underwent intensive therapy every single day. And so the VA was very, very good to me, and they did a really good job. And this was White River Junction, Vermont. But I still, even though the VA inpatient, it sort of stopped my decline. I didn't really start getting better. I mean, the psychosis and the depression continued. until my wife called up my doctor and said, "Hey, doctor, you have to try something else. This isn't working. He's not getting better." And they said, "Okay, let's try lithium, which is a natural salt harvested out of the earth." And so once I started taking lithium, in less than a week, my symptoms pretty much vanished. I went back to my old self. I had energy again. I was interested in things again. I was enthusiastic. I had a real desire to live and to get better and to start, you know, having fun again. And so lithium was sort of my miracle drug. And with that, we made a decision for health reasons to move to Florida, to get out of the cold, dark Northeast, which is where I'm from, and get into the sunshine, the warmth, the brightness. And so living in Florida for the last 7.5 years has also been key to my recovery.
Just the sunshine and being able to be outside more often, right? And I know that they talk about how important that is to people. So, and I think that, you know, you have had to spend those last 7 years, really from 2016 on, kind of repairing your relationships, rebuilding your life, right? Reconnecting with your family. So aside from sunshine and having nice weather, what else are you doing to ensure your continuous recovery? Because it really is going to be a lifelong process for you, right?
Yes. So this is really a lifelong transition process. You know, I came out of bipolar hell, and then the lithium saved me. It got my brain balance, my brain chemistry back in balance, so I could, you know, function as a normal person, not severely depressed, not psychotic, not manic. And so once I got my brain chemistry stabilized, then I had to really work my personal transition process. And first was rebuild the relationship with my wife, because, I mean, it was really hard on her to see me in such a terrible state for all that time. Then, you know, rebuild, reconnect with my family, which was key. Then I would say I had to have a transition plan that was built to last. And the way I did it was first medications. And I continued working with the VA down here in Florida. But, you know, so I have the right medication. Because if with mental illness, if you don't get the medication right and you don't get your brain in balance, you're probably not going to get better. It's probably not going to work. Because the reason that I was sick in the first place is because the chemistry in my brain was out of whack due to bipolar disease. And it is a disease of the brain, an illness. So anyway, the medication. Second, therapist. Super important to have a trained, qualified therapist to talk to on a regular basis. Because what a therapist does is they get to know you and they understand your situation. They learn what your triggers are that could put you back into a bad place. And they help you solve problems. That's really what my therapist does. So that's number two. Number three is living a healthy life. So healthy diet, plenty of exercise, plenty of sleep, lots of water, low stress, you know, those elements. So with those three, those are necessary but not sufficient to live a healthy life and to recover and have a recovery that's built to last. You really need to anchor it into what I call the five P's. And the five P's are, first, purpose. You have to have a purpose. And it took me a couple of years to really develop and hone in on a purpose that worked for me, which I now have. And it's sharing my bipolar story to help stop the stigma, promote recovery, and save lives. So purpose, it's the driving force. And when you're in the military, you have a purpose and a mission because you're in the military. I mean, it's given to you. But when you're not in the military, you have to come up with your own. The second is people, the second P. It's really critical to have a network of friends that you like being around, who are happy, fun, energetic, and lift your spirits. And my wife Maggie and I have really rebuilt. We built from scratch a whole network of very vibrant, energetic people that are fun to be with. Third P is place. And I talked about moving to Florida. But it's really important to the extent you can to live somewhere that you can do the things you want and be with the people you want. And I gave up a lot of my passions to move to Florida. Like I used to love living in the mountains where I could go skiing all the time, but I traded that because the sunshine and the warmth is more important for my health. And I can always take a ski trip in the winter if I want. The fourth P is perseverance. This is hard. Transitioning in any situation is tough. Transitioning with a mental health problems or a mental illness or a brain challenge is much harder. And so you have to have the will to win, the will to fight, to never quit, never give up, that when things turn bad, you're going to fight back out of where you're at. And then the fifth P is presence. And presence is the ability to get outside of your own mind and think objectively about your own thinking. And the reason it's important is lots of times what's going on in our own heads can be destructive and lead us astray. And the things we're thinking are not even true. And so that's why it's important to think objectively about our own thoughts. So anyway, that's my strategy, and those are the key elements of my transition recovery.
I love your five P's, and I think that they apply to everyone. No
Yes.
matter if they're struggling with mental illness, if they're dealing with that type of a disease, or just looking to live a happier, more fulfilled life. So I think your five P's apply to absolutely everyone. Thank you for sharing those with us. I have a hard time thinking about the fact that you served for many years, 10 plus years, as a senior army leader with undiagnosed bipolar disorder. But you kept, you have to get regular health checkups as a military leader, and you continually received a clean bill of health from your medical and your psychiatric evaluations. Like, can you talk to us about bipolar disorder and what happens when you have that disease and why it's so difficult to diagnose?
Sure. Well, first thing is, if you have bipolar disorder, that means you were born with a bipolar brain and with the bipolar gene. And at some point in your life, you had a triggering event, some kind of traumatic, super stressful event that triggered that genetic predisposition. And so oftentimes, prior to onset, people have no idea. There's no blood test to say I have bipolar disorder. There's nothing that anybody can do can tell until you actually have an onset and you're in the midst of real mania and real depression, which was the case with me. But I had this. I was living on the bipolar spectrum probably from high school on, and I gradually, little by little, over years and decades, rose up that spectrum until I was really close to bipolar disorder. But nobody noticed that there was anything wrong with me, that I was heading towards bipolar, because I was super successful. I was a senior officer. I had all the traits. I mean, I was the perfect army leader. I had all the traits they wanted. I mean, I was smart, enthusiastic, tons of energy, driven, loved being around people, was an extrovert. Was in fantastic physical condition and very competitive. And so when people looked at me, they just saw success. They never imagined that there's something wrong with this guy, and neither did I. And I kept getting promoted and sent to higher commands and so forth. Where things changed, and somebody should have been able to pick it up, was my triggering event was the first year of the Iraq War. I was a brigade commander in charge of about 10,000 soldiers. And that was that the amount of stress, euphoria, the thrill, the pressure of that experience, that triggered or ignited my bipolar gene. And I went into real mania for the first time. But my mania, and so that was in 2003, and I got fired in 2014. So I went 11 more years. And my mania was going higher and higher. My depression was going lower. I started getting more serious psychotic events. But the mania which I was in most of the time, was a high performing mania that boosted my performance. It made me better, gave me more energy. My problem solving skills were sharper. I was more creative. I didn't need as much sleep. And so it helped me. So I was actually doing better even as the bipolar disorder got worse until it went too high. And then it was obvious to the whole world, there's something wrong with General Martin. And then that led to the chairman pulling me out of command.
Okay. And so I think that it's, if we think about someone who is maybe listening and is struggling, I would highly recommend, first of all, reading your book. It's a compelling story. It talks a lot about what you've done to deal with that, to rebuild your life. And I would encourage them to seek help, right? To seek assistance, to talk to someone about what they're experiencing. You told us about your purpose, right? Your first P and kind of your mission statement. Like, how are you embodying that mission statement? What are some of the things that you're doing now as an advocate?
Yeah, so the things that I do are I write, I speak, and I confer. And confer is a fancy word for meeting with people and talking about mental health, mental illness, bipolar disorder. But writing, I actually have published over 20 articles, and they're on my website. And they've been in, Psychology Today, Psychiatric Times, the Boston Globe, Proceedings, Soldier Magazine, Tampa Bay Times, et cetera. So, I mean, I'm well published, and that's a big part of what I do. Then I wrote a book, which was, really the, kind of my crowning achievement is the book, because it really pulls everything together and tells it in detail, with, a lot of, I mean, I put a lot of research into writing the book as well. I learned tons about psychiatry, about bipolar disorder, about mental illness. So I write and then I speak. And a good example is what we're doing right now, Lori. We're having a great conversation. It's being recorded on your wonderful podcast. And so I've spoken to probably close to 100 different audiences. I spoke to the whole Department of the Navy. I've spoken to about a half a dozen Army commands, several Navy commands. I've spoken to all the new one stars and two stars and SESs and Command Master Chiefs in the Navy. In their leadership course, they brought me in to talk about mental health. I've spoken to a number of Fortune 500 companies, Rotary clubs. Most exciting for me has been speaking to hospitals, to include VA hospitals. I spoke to the Chicago VA Hospital, Tampa, and some others. But lots of hospitals and med schools have asked me to come in and speak and tell my story. And there's a number of professors that are actually using the book already in med school classes to teach about mental illness and bipolar disorder. And I've also spoken at a bunch of medical associations, and I've been keynote speaker at about a half a dozen of these conventions and conferences and so forth. So speaking is big. And then the third one is conferring. Just as an example, this morning, Case Western University is doing a big research study trying to answer all kinds of complicated questions about bipolar disorder. And I'm on their steering committee, and they call me an expert by lived experience. So you can be an expert by studying, books and learning, or you can be an expert by doing it. And so I have the
You've lived
dubious
it. Yeah.
distinction of having done it. And so, I'm on the steering committee and we talk about, goals, objective, what we're going to do next, et cetera. So those are the three things that I do.
Okay. I feel like you are the perfect example of someone who has taken a situation that was really out of your control, a terrible situation that obviously you didn't want to be fired from the position you held. You didn't want to be medically retired at what was really the pinnacle of your career, but you have really found a way to turn things around and to rebuild your life and to really find that purpose and embody all five of those P's that you shared with us. So just in closing, if there's someone listening that maybe they're currently serving or they served in the military and they're struggling with mental health issues and they're hesitant to get support, they're hesitant to reach out for help, what would you say to them?
A couple things. First off, if you do have a mental condition, if you don't do anything and you don't get help, and you have a serious situation, you face a destructive path. Typically, people with serious mental illness, it ruins their marriage, their family, their career, their finances. It often leads to homelessness, addictions, incarceration, and death, often by suicide. So that's, if you do nothing, that's the path you're essentially choosing. But if you go get help, you can live, there's a very good chance you can live a happy, healthy, purposeful life, but the choice is yours. I would say for everybody, so basically, if you do have issues and you know you have issues, go get help. Or if somebody that cares about you, be it a friend, a family member, a work colleague, if they come to you and talk to you, which I would encourage them to do and say, hey, I'm concerned about you, I'm seeing these troubling signs, then you should go get help and listen to them. One thing that everybody should do is to get educated and trained on what the basic symptoms of the most common mental conditions are. You know, what are they? What do they look like? Because for me, I was around thousands of people for over a decade with serious bipolar disorder, but nobody recognized it. And the reason they didn't is because they weren't trained. They didn't know what mania looks like or what depression looks like. So I think everybody needs to get training and then normalize the conversation. The final thing I'll say is talk about is stigma. Stigma is the biggest barrier to people getting help from a mental condition. It's the number one reason people don't get help. And that's so unfortunate because stigma is based on fear and ignorance. There should be zero stigma about mental health. And it's because it's physically real. It's biologically real. It's just that it's inside the brain. So it's invisible and you can't see it. But it's just as physically real as diabetes, heart disease, cancer. And there's no stigma surrounding those. You know, a lot of people think with the stigma that it's the person's fault, that they're weak, they have no character, they're not trying hard enough. But that's all nonsense. And so the thing with me is I said, once I got my diagnosis, I owned it. I said, this is mine. I have bipolar disorder. I am not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed. It's a physiological disease inside my brain. And I am going to do everything I can to get better and to transition into a recovery. And so I would just say, whatever your condition is, you know, if you had a broken back, if you have, you know, some kind of mental illness, whatever the situation, accept it, you know, deal with reality, own it, develop a plan and move forward.
Love it. Thank you so much for your candidness, for what you've shared with us. And I really appreciate the knowledge that you've shared, and the guidance and the wisdom, because I think anyone out there that may be struggling may feel like they're the only ones. And they may feel like as you said, they're weak or they're, you know, they can't tell anyone. And I think that the biggest part of recovery is, as you said, like owning it and saying, okay, this is what I'm dealing with, and now I need to fix it. If you broke your leg, you wouldn't say, oh, I got to walk it off and rub some dirt in it. You would go and get treated. You would get a cast. You would get surgery. You would get the treatment for that. And so I hope that anyone listening that may be having some struggles will take that same approach to any mental issues that they might be having. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Laura. You do a fantastic job. It's really an honor and a privilege. And to all the listeners, thanks for being on and being interested.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and join our YouTube channel so you don't miss any lessons that we share.